buddy Bill Buckmaster, along with Bob Dio. Bob on the other side of the glass, producing and engineering our show. Ray Allen taking a much deserved week off today. We welcome you to the Buckmaster Show on this Monday. It's June 18th, 2018. Hope you had a great weekend. It was just so nice, wasn't it, to get that very steady rainfall, like for about 24 hours, a little bit off and on, but really soaked in, and about an inch and a half to anywhere for some people had over 2 inches, so we certainly need it. We're coming to you live from Tucson's Voice, AM 1030 KVOI. We have our worldwide live streaming of the program at buckmastershow.com and kvoi.com. We have our podcasts and the complete show archive available for you on my website, buckmastershow.com, if you'd like to join in on our Monday political face-off with Jeff Rogers and John Munger. 790-2040 is our live line number. Our face-off commentators today, Mr. Munger, Tucson attorney, former chair of the Arizona Board of Regents, actually president of the Regents, right? Yeah, not chair. Yeah. Also, John ran in 2010 for the Republican governorship, and it's also good to have Jeff Rogers with us. Jeff served a couple of terms as the Pima County Democratic Party chair. He's been involved in Democratic politics for a long time. Jeff and John, how was the weekend?
Lovely, wasn't it?
That was great.
It was great. You know, when the rain stopped Saturday night, I went outside to walk my dog, and it was actually a little cool.
Oh, yeah.
Which was
and
really
we went out and
refreshing.
Played golf the day after. It was lovely.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really nice. Temperatures down into the 60s, so it was very pleasant. Monday Political Face-Off, sponsored by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe specializes in custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, picture framing and hanging services, and hanging systems. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing at Fort Lowell and Dodge and at moesgallery.com. So much to talk about, but let's begin today, John and Jeff, with this enforcement, the zero tolerance, enforcing the law at the border. And my question to both of you is this, is enforcing the law, is it justified, John, to separate migrant children from their parents?
Well, that's what the law is. The law says that. If you come in through the entryways, then you're not separated. But if you come in other than through the entryways, the law requires that if the parents are arrested, then the children are separated from the parents. The children are then released, as I recall, after 20 days. You know, one of the problems I have is that so many people don't want the law to be enforced. The answer is enforce the law, and if you don't like the law, change it. The other interesting thing is this started through the second Bush administration, and actually Obama doubled the efforts to separate the children from the parents in an effort to enforce the law. The United States takes in about two-thirds of the asylum seekers in the world. I don't know if you knew that, but we take in more asylum seekers than anybody else in the world, all the other nations combined. And we need to quit talking about what we don't like about enforcing the law and change the law if we don't like the law. People don't like the enforcement of the law, but people are tired of the law not being enforced.
All right, here's Jeff Rogers.
Well, first off, the law does not require separation of these children from their families. That's absolutely untrue. That's a myth being propagated by Donald Trump and some of his other people. Many of the people surrounding him are finally admitting that the law does not require that, that there is no Democrat law that was passed to do that. And Obama did not double the separation of families from parents from their children. Obama did double up on enforcement of immigration laws, targeting criminal defendants and people who had committed crimes and were dangerous people. He didn't target people who were coming across the border who had committed no offenses. Now, let's keep in mind, the fact is that when you cross the border illegally without papers, that is a misdemeanor offense. And for decades, every president, every administration has taken the choice to say, okay, what we will do is if people cross the border without papers and they have no crimes and they've never crossed before, we will send them back across the border. And if they have a family with them or children with them, we'll send the children back with them. And we'll consider that a civil removal. Now, what that does, it ups the stakes. Now, when they come back, if they try to come back again, that's going to be a felony because they've previously been removed. Now, usually what happens with those, and has happened over decades and all administrations, is they do something that's similar to what we call now streamline, and that those people then plead guilty to a misdemeanor and are sentenced to 6 months or less in jail and then sent back across the border. After that, they will file nothing less than a felony charge, which carries substantial prison time. So that's the law that we have today on crossing the border. There is absolutely no requirement that children be separated from their families unless a person is charged with a felony offense. The Obama administration did experiment with this a very slight bit. There was a period of about, I think it's been 2.5 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, where there was an enormous surge of Central American refugees with families who were coming across the border. And at that time, there was some because it was logistically a nightmare. And there had to be something done about that. And that we're not facing those kinds of crisis crossings right now. The proper way to cross the border and apply for asylum is to go to a port of entry, an official port of entry. But then you're not committing an offense or a crime at all. You're just applying for asylum. And those people should be kept together. But the problem is that the Trump administration is shutting down that avenue, forcing the people to go to try to get in other ways, which then begin to be a crime. Mm-hmm. And they've basically shut off the ports of entry and clogged it up with saying that they don't have the resources, which indeed they do. They have plenty of resources to do that. So a lot of this is the fault of the Trump administration, and this has been planned since day one. We're now starting to hear from insiders that this was a plan to do this from day one when he was inaugurated.
Okay, John.
Here's the problem. What Jeff just said is the right way to do it is come through the port of entry, and they don't like the fact that people come through the port of entry seeking asylum. Remember, we take 2/3 of the asylum seekers in the world, and they seek asylum. About 95% of them don't have a basis for asylum, and they are rejected at the port of entry because they don't qualify for asylum.
That's not how asylum works. You're supposed to let them in and investigate their claim of asylum.
Let me finish. If people come through the border entryway, then they don't have a problem. They don't want to come through the entryway. That's not anybody's fault but their own. They come in illegally. Now the parents then are detained. Okay? Do you want the children to stay with the parents in the jail? I don't think so. So that we have to do something with the children. The courts have ruled that if the parents are detained, then the children have to be separated from the parents.
That's absolutely not true.
That is absolutely true, Jeff.
The administration's stance on things right
that
now.
That is the court rulings, Jeff.
The judges have said their hands are tied and that they cannot do anything about it.
And the courts have said that if the children need to be separated. The problem is, people don't want to enforce the law. They've got this law, and half of the country doesn't want to enforce what the law is. The pictures that you see of these cages are pictures from the Obama administration with children in wire cages. Those are all from the Obama administration. That is not happening today. It was being done under the Obama administration. It is not being done today. Your question is, if the parents are detained, do you want the children to stay with the parents in the jail? The answer is no.
We have family detention facilities, John. We have one in Tucson. There are multiple ones in Texas.
And we don't have enough of them. And nor are we required to do that, Jeff. And the bottom line answer...
We're not required to do it, but it is morally incumbent on us to do this. This is... We are being condemned by the entire
parents,
world. The entire world is condemning
parents,
America.
If Jeff, let me finish. If the parents are detained, the children cannot stay with them. It's just physically...
That's absolutely not true, John.
That is absolutely true.
John,
I'm sorry, Jeff.
I practice in federal court. I'm there all the time. I get to see these stories unfold in live action.
And I
so
practice,
let me tell you what you're telling people is not true.
I practice immigration law, Jeff, and what I'm saying is true. And so the bottom line answer is that if we don't like the law, then change it. What they're trying to do is leverage, they're trying to create a political issue where no political issue exists. We have a law. The law needs to be enforced. They don't like the law. And therefore, if they don't like the law, they need to go change it.
Well, I'm shocked to hear John propounding the same political propaganda that and lies that Donald Trump
is
telling
Jeff,
people.
Well, Jeff, I'm sorry to tell you what
ridiculous.
I'm telling you is the truth.
All right. Obviously, we have a disagreement. We'll take our break right here. It is the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lawland Dodge, and at moesgallery.com. Also, this would be a good time to stop by and get some lunch up at Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's open now for lunch. You can have that wonderful bread that they... Oh, my goodness. I was up at Mona's yesterday. Their bread just... Oh, what can I say? And the brownies for dessert. Anyway, go to my website, buckmastershow.com, a link to Mona's Danish Bakery, and I'll link to all of our fine sponsors. We'll be right back. In case you haven't heard, a recent state performance audit says the Regional Transportation Authority is meeting performance and budget expectations on voter-approved RTA plan delivery. Now in its 12th year of plan implementation, the RTA is committed to delivering the remaining projects with the community's support to improve our regional transportation system. Working together for a better future, visit rtamobility.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
With spring in the air, summer will be here before you know it. At Bon Voyage Travel, we want to help you stay cool through the hot summer months, and there's no better way than a Holland America cruise to Alaska. There are hundreds of dates and itineraries to create your perfect Alaska vacation. Why not add a Rocky Mountaineer train journey while you're there to explore all of North America? Call Bon Voyage Travel today at 797-1110 or visit bvtravel.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. Coming up Tuesday during the noon hour, we'll have a mid-year economic forecast, plus certified financial planner Shelley Fishman. We'll have the Tuesday Moneymaker Report, all happening on Buckmaster. Noon to 1 on Tucson's AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, anywhere on the world live streaming podcast and show archive on my website, buckmastershow.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and it is the Monday Political Face-Off presented by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and of course they're on Facebook. Check out Moe's for all of your framing needs. 790-2040, Jeff Rogers and John Munger with us. Let's go to the live line now. Adriana has been waiting patiently. Hey, Adriana.
Good afternoon. I'm going to tell you, I'm an American of Mexican descent. And my parents got their green cards, and they worked hard. And they bought their land, they bought their house, and they've worked hard, and they've been a part of the community. At the same time, I saw his family, his sisters, his brothers, come through chain migration, illegally cross into the United States, get a green card, and then sponsor one after the other, after the other, after the other. And that is wrong. It is wrong. We have a system that's corrupt, and the Democrats seem to not even care. It's not even about, you know, a moral issue, and the whole world is condemning America. America has done more for this entire world, a nation that's not even that old, and yet we are still the ones that do the most. I could really care less about what the world thinks of us, because we still do more than everyone. And as an American of Mexican descent, that is my flag. These are the laws.
Okay.
This is how we are a country.
All right.
Congratulations. Good for you.
Well, congratulations to your parents, and they did it the right way. I don't know if you why you believe that people came across illegally and got green cards. That's certainly not what the law allows. As a matter of fact, if you come across illegally and you're caught, you're not getting a green card, and you can't even attempt to reenter the United States for 10 years. That's immigration law. So there's something fishy sounding about how these people got green cards or got across the border. But you know, this term chain migration, we used to call it family unity, and that is where. And I know some people who came here legally and got their green card, got their citizenship, and 10 or 15, 20 years later, they brought across their retired parents and cared for them. And those retired parents are not leeches on our society or taking any kind of social benefits. They're cared for by their kids. So they're, you know, I don't like the word chain migration. I think it insinuates people are doing something sneaky when it's perfectly lawful to, after a period of time, sponsor some relatives and bring them across the border.
Well,
legally.
I can tell you, Jeff, that as an immigration lawyer, you do get green cards if you bring people across through chain migration. That's not illegal migration.
Well, you've brought them here legally. That's
under current laws. Yeah. What the lady's referring to is that the concept of bringing in family member after family member, and what you have is you bring in a couple, and then they bring in a couple, and then they bring in a couple, and it never stops.
Well,
and the problem is, we used to have an immigration system that was based upon merit, and it was based upon what can you provide to this country. Now, there also needs to be asylum and those types of things. As I've said, the lady is right. We've done more in the area of asylum than any country in the world, all the other countries combined. But the concept of just taking in, starting with one group of people, and then you bring in this chain of people, doesn't make any sense. And we can argue about that all you want. You can call it family unity. This country needs to have a sensical immigration system where we are bringing in people largely, not completely, based upon merit.
All right, let's see if we can get all three of the callers in the next 5 minutes on the show. They've all been waiting very patiently. Ingrid, you are up to the plate. Go ahead, Ingrid.
Okay, well, I have so much, but I'll have to cut it short,
just,
I guess.
Just a brief comment, please.
Listening to Dennis Prager, and he said that all of Latin America is terrible, which is why everybody wants to come here. And I thought, well, you know, if you don't like it in Colombia, why don't you go to Panama? And if you don't like it in Belize or Guatemala, go to Mexico. But I guess those countries aren't good enough, so they have to come to the United States. These other countries in between are allowing these people to pass right through when they're told that the travelers want to get to the United States. Sounds kind of strange. And another thing that Dennis Prager said is these Latin American countries are terrible. Don't they speak Portuguese in Brazil? And perhaps the politics are a little different over there.
All right. Thank you.
Good.
Any comments?
Well, a lot of the people coming from Central America, from places where they're fleeing violence, are settling in Mexico. And frankly, Mexico is taking many of them in. Others go further north and try to get into the United States, certainly. But Mexico is actually a destination because despite the problem with drug gangs and other issues in Mexico, it's a lot safer there than it is in many of those Central American countries.
Well, the problem is Mexico takes in only a small minority of those people, very small minority. Mexico actually has enforceable laws, and they enforce their laws. They actually have a border wall, and they provide maps and instructions on how to get here, what to say to qualify for asylum, etc. And that has created a terrible problem on our system, because people come into this country seeking asylum and uttering the magic words that they lie, and that is not justified. Mexico knows it's happening, and they don't do anything about it. We see trainloads of people coming in this way.
All right. Alinda is next. Alinda, go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. There was a June 14, 2016 congressional report about these issues. $948 million of our tax money was provided to settle these children in the United States. And only $10 million was dedicated to torture victims. This money that comes down from the federal government to care for these children is handed out to contractors and congregate care homes. I mean, we have a home here where children have been warehoused for over 3 years. Okay. How do I know that? There's a church in town that knits 300 wool hats for these miserable children who have been held captive.
Okay, Alinda. Going to have to run. Thank you very much.
It's a little bit
much.
Like the private prison industry. There are contractors who are profiting from this warehousing of people.
Well, what we need to focus on is after these children are released that we were talking about, they are released largely to foster care homes and to people that take in these children. They're only held for 20 days, and as I recall.
All right.
And there has to be somebody to take them in. You can't just turn these children out on the streets if their parents are incarcerated.
Here is our next caller, Matthew. Go ahead, Matthew.
Yeah, you know, we're just criminalizing a basic function of the economy, the basic function of nature for people to migrate. And our birth rate recently has dropped for the first time in the United States, meaning we will not have enough people to replace the people that are working today. We need every immigrant we can get. And ultimately, what we're doing right now is, as Jeff described, is we are setting ourselves up where we will be held accountable for our actions. For the first time, I ever believe a United States official will stand before a world court and have to answer for what's going on today. Thank you. Bye.
Well, let me make a comment on that. This country takes in, as I've said twice now, and I'll say a third time, two-thirds of the asylum seekers in the world. We hardly have anything to be ashamed of.
We should be duly ashamed of what we're doing right now, separating children from their parents.
Well,
that is absolutely,
if the parents are incarcerated, what are you going to do,
John,
Jeff?
We have family facilities where they can be held. I've told you that.
Yeah,
secondly,
well,
we can reunite them immediately as the mother or father is being deported, because that's what's happening, is they're not getting reunited away when the parents are deported.
They are being reunited in the due course of events.
There's no proof of that, John.
Well, there's no proof that they aren't being reunited, Jeff. I believe they are. This country is not a cruel country. We are not purposely keeping the children from their parents. It may not all happen simultaneously. I don't know. I don't know the percentages of that, and I don't think you do either. I think that the answer to it is that as the last gentleman said, if we don't like the laws, change the laws. But enforce the laws as they are. People are tired.
There's nothing in the law that requires us to separate these families.
I disagree with you, Jeff, and I've said it before.
For generations, every president of both parties has not engaged in this kind of behavior.
No, that is not true. Obama did it.
Obama did it for a very short period of time when we were suffering a crisis.
And we are suffering a crisis now, Jeff. He didn't institute a new policy. We are suffering a crisis now. Obama did it, and all of a sudden you Democrats are taking a political position for political benefit to blame Trump for what Obama already did.
All right, we're going to have to run right at that point. John Munger, Jeff Rogers, gentlemen, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, John.
Thank you.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and moesgallery.com presents our Monday political face-off. We thank Moe and his team. Been in business since 1985. They've been in town a long time, but not back to 1800s. Anyway, that's going to do it for the face-off. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. One of my passions is travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. When I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 6 airlines flying nonstop to 19 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient, with competitive airfares, and the best part is there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Check out flytucson.com, travel smart, and fly Tucson. It's the way to go. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. This portion presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. In the summertime, we like to say, and it is completely factual, it's 10 to 15 degrees cooler over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, because of the elevation. So if you're looking to get away from what could be a very, very hot week here, by the end of the week, I think they're calling for 110. Might want to do a road trip over to Silver City. Visit southwestnewmexico.org for the complete listing of the great places to stay and visit in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. David Layton is with us. And David, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. And we always love to talk with you because we learn so much about the origin of our streets. David writes the Street Smarts column in the Arizona Daily Star, which I think is kind of on a monthly basis now, isn't it, David?
That's correct. For many years, it was on a weekly basis, but now it's a once a month column. It comes out the first Monday of every month.
Yeah, you know, we were talking just before we went on the air, David, about who decides the name of a street. Is it a developer? Is it the city? Or is it the county? How does it all work?
Well, nowadays, most of the street names are done by developers. I mean, the county and city, of course, can still name streets or roads if they want to, of course. And it also depends on the location as well. For example, in the Coronado National Forest, the last one I did was on Sollers Road, which is up on Mount Lemmon, leads to the Sollers Heliport and Sollers Cabin. And that was actually named, if I understand this correctly, was named by the National Forest itself, U.S. Forest Service named that one. But in most cases in Tucson, it's named by developers nowadays. Like I said before, it was more prominent. If my understanding is correct of the process, they choose names, usually developers, or the developers will give it to the engineering firm they're working with or one of their assistants, and they'll come up with street names. And then the street names are sent to the county, and then the county makes sure that they're not duplicate names or they're not names considered offensive. And nowadays they check Spanish as well to make sure that the streets makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are some funny street names in Tucson. So, some of them actually have history, like Rancho Sin Vacas is one I think we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. And that actually, people call it, and they say it's funny, it's a ranch without cows, but it was actually, it actually has a little history behind it. I mean, it was called that because the person that bought the land, who was an industrialist from Indianapolis, Indiana, bought the land. And because cattle were roaming freely and eating up all the food, he actually fenced in his land or his ranch to keep cows out, so to allow the birds and other animals to get in there and actually have something to eat and drink, because the cows were just eating everything up. And that's why it's called Rancho Sin Vacas, or ranch without cows. Some people have said, oh, well, that doesn't make sense, and it's a misuse of Spanish, but that was actually why he called it that. It was like a sanctuary for other animals, to give them something to eat, and he used horse troughs to allow water and stuff like that for the birds and all that stuff and other animals.
If you have a question about your particular street or you're curious about a street here in southern Arizona, David Layton is with us.
David Layton
is with us. Call now, 790-2040. David would be happy to answer your question. You had a piece about the builder, Tom Doucette.
Doucette Homes, yeah.
And that was concerning the Hill Farm development.
Right. The article itself, which was a couple months ago, before the Sollers Road one last month, covers a lot of streets. The article itself covers probably about approximately 30 streets that he or his staff named all across Tucson. Hill Farm was one of the first ones, or possibly the first one he did, and that one derives its name from Dr. Donald Hill, who owned that land there where Hill Farms is at now, and he named the streets after, you know, things related to Donald Hill or his farm or different stuff like that. So that was kind of, the streets were named in conjunction with what was there in the area as well, you know, whereas other streets he's named, for example, could be random streets and stuff like that. But he was quite a prolific street namer, as are numerous other developers as well. I'm actually looking for some other developers, especially if they're retired. I mean, if there's any retired developers out there who would be interested in sitting down, doing an interview, talking about the streets you named, just email me at azjournalist21@gmail.com. Again, it's AZ like Arizona, azjournalist21@gmail.com. Because developers can be really interesting to sit down with and talk about all the streets they've named and the developments they've done. And it's surprising that it's actually really popular with people. You know, it's one of the things that are really popular.
Ray Manley was a very well-known photographer. His work, I first saw his work in Arizona highways, and he worked for many, many years here in Tucson. You're working on a piece about Ray right now.
Right. That's one of the projects I'm working on, a side project I'm working on. I'm hoping Arizona Highways will be interested in it. What I'm looking to do is create basically like a 3-to-5-page layout with his children, Alan and Carolyn, who both live here in Tucson, about his life and all the accomplishments that he's done. Most people know Ray Manley from Arizona Highways or National Geographic. He's also been in Life, Look, Saturday Evening Post. I made several books during his lifetime with this incredible photography. I mean, he was a contemporary of Ansel Adams, David and Joseph Munich, and stuff like that. So I'm working on a piece with his family currently, so I'll be submitting it to the Arizona Highways, and hopefully they'll be willing to run it, since he did help that magazine become world famous as well with his photography. He was a fascinating guy. He did, you know, probably thousands of photographs. You can find his photographs. U of A Special Collections has some. Arizona Historic Society has some. You know, they're in all the old Arizona highways and stuff like that. So I think, you know, he did a lot more than people are aware of. People were familiar with his photography, but they weren't necessarily familiar with his life and who he was. You know, he's a native Arizonan, born in Cottonwood in the early 1920s, you know, took his first photograph, I think, you know, or first photographs when he was, you know, just kind of a young kid, and, you know, got published in Arizona Highways early on. And actually that one photograph actually helped him when the war came around, got him into the photography school. So he actually taught photography school in the U.S. Navy before moving to Tucson.
Had a Facebook question about a street called Poets Corner. Do you know anything about that?
So Poets Corner is a very common question that I get. Poets Corner is actually a neighborhood versus a street itself. And we might have discussed this one before. I'm not sure. But back in the 1920s, a guy named John Roberts, who owned land on the corner of it would be the south east corner of what's now Alvernon and Broadway. He owned land and decided he wanted to develop it. And he decided that he was going to name his streets after his favorite writers and poets. So you've got streets like Poe Street. You've got streets like Longfellow, who is, of course, a poet. Poe Street is Edgar Allan Poe. So he named a bunch of streets after you know, poets and writers that were his favorite ones, dating back to like the 1920s. Haynes is there. Timrod, I believe Timrod if my research is correct, is actually named after the unofficial poet laureate of the Confederate States of America.
Really? I've wondered about that.
And he was actually
T-I-M-R-O-D. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't named after the children of a developer, which is apparently the story that's out there, because that one dates back to like 1922 or something like that. And Haines and Tim Rod were like the last two streets named of those streets, because they're north. The streets are north of Broadway and south of Broadway, and I believe those were like the last two that were named together. So I think, you know, it's kind of an interesting. Haines and Tim Rod were actually close friends throughout their life, or most of their life. So, and it's interesting that they named those two streets together, the last two streets before they stopped naming poets. But Poet Square is basically an area where a bunch of street names that run through an area or name for poets or writers. As well.
All right. 790-2040 if you'd like to join in the conversation. David Lighton is here, and we'll talk about Street Smarts and his column and what he's working on about Howard Hughes and Howard Hughes's connection to the Old Pueblo. That's coming up after we take our break right here on the Buckmaster Show. The Regional Transportation Authority funds projects to help make our transportation system safe, reliable, and efficient. Improve regional mobility is important for economic vitality for businesses and families. The RTA continues to finance construction work for six new roadway projects scheduled in 2018. For more information on RTA projects, visit rtamobility.com. The RTA is delivering its promise to you. This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Next time you book a flight, type in T-U-S. Travel smart and fly Tucson. It's the way to go.
Did you know that you can check out complete digital editions of popular magazines with your Pima County Public Library card? From Arizona Highways to Yoga Journal and everything in between, the library is your source for entertainment. Visit library.pima.gov and browse the e-library to start checking out your favorite magazines today. That's library.pima.gov.
Hi, it's Suzanne Miller from your Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona, here to remind you to start with trust and look for the BBB accredited seal when searching for a product or service. Did you know you can request a quote directly from any of our accredited businesses? With over 3,000 accredited businesses in Southern Arizona, you will find a business you can trust. Whether you need a product or service from one company or an entire industry, go to tucson.bbb.org and start your search today.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com, or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. This portion of the program presented by our friends over at Green Things. And Green Things will soon be the home of Zocalo. And Zocalo has all that great merchandise from Mexico and Latin America. They are located near the corner of Country Club and Broadway. They've been in town a long time, but now they're going to be moving over to Green Things on River Road on their 13-acre site. And they've got all sorts of great merchandise right now that's available for a kind of pre-moving sale. So why should they move it all over there to Green Things if they can sell it to you at a deeply discounted price? It sure will cut down on worrying about moving all of that stuff. So check it out, Green Things and Zocalo. The new marriage, and I think it's going to be a very successful one at that. David Lighton is with us. David is the Street Smarts columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. We're talking about streets in Tucson. David, 790-2040. You'd be happy to talk with anyone. And we're talking during the break about the first map of Tucson streets, and I guess that was early in the Civil War.
That's correct. The first known map of Tucson was created in 1862. Mm-hmm. When the Union was occupying Tucson, one of the things that they did is they actually mapped out all the properties in Tucson and it gave all the streets. And the streets, there was only about, I would say, four or five different street names that were on the map, but they were all in Spanish at that point. So later on, as the years pass, there's no proof to actually show this, but it's more than likely that the streets, the newer streets, probably gained names in English. Now, in 1870, this is a fact that most people do not know. In 1870, the Pima County Board of Supervisors assigned their clerk to draw a map of Tucson with the goal that they were going to rename the streets in name of honor. The streets were actually named in honor of people killed by Apaches.
Really?
Right. And that was part of the designation. Now, the map, I don't know where that map or whatever happened to that map because I've never seen it. And the only reason I know about the map is because I was going through at the clerk of the Pima County Board of Supervisors their old records on microfiche. And I found documentation to show that they had ordered a map, the clerk, to make a map of Tucson and that they were going to name the streets after prominent Tucsonans that were killed by Apaches, and they were memorial streets.
Do you have a couple of those? Any names pop out?
The one that now it doesn't list. And I even checked old newspapers, old newspapers, and I found a record of them making the map, and the fact that they were going to name it in honor of individuals, prominent individuals killed by Apaches. Now, Stone Street, which is now Stone Avenue, likely was named in 1870. Again, without ever having seen the map or known what happened to it, I don't know what streets were named on there, but Stone Street, I know, probably was one of those because John F. Stone was killed in 1869, and he was a prominent citizen of Tucson, and he actually built the first home on what became Stone Street and later Stone Avenue where the police station's at. Wow. So if you're on Stone and McCormick where the police station's at, that was originally the John F. Stone house.
Oh.
So, and that's why, you know, when he was killed, they named it as a memorial to him. That's one of the reasons why I don't like the idea that the city council wants to change street names, especially downtown, is because those street names, not all of them, but the ones named in the early history, a lot of those were named after people that were killed by Apaches.
Or kind of memorial.
It's their memorial streets. Right. They're memorial streets named in their honor. So, I mean, you wouldn't go to the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and just take people's names off and change it to something that fits what you want. Now, all the streets are not named after, you know, memorials to people passed away. Like Ochoa Street was named after Esteban Ochoa, who was not killed by Apaches. He was a prominent citizen. But a lot of those streets, like Pennington, were named in honor of people that were murdered. And that they're memorial streets, and they shouldn't be changed, in my opinion. Anyway.
All right, let's go to the live line. Dan has called us at 790-2040. Go ahead, Dan.
Yes, thank you. Back in the 30s, when I was a kid, we took a monthly magazine called the Arizona Magazine. And during the war years, all that kind of got messed up, and I was in the Army a long time. Did that magazine evolve into Arizona Highways?
No, Arizona Magazine actually was a different magazine, and they still have some copies of those at the Joel Valdez main library. You can still get copies of those. Yeah, it was a different magazine. Arizona Highways began back, I think it was 1921. It was just basically kind of like a pamphlet.
To promote Arizona, basically.
To promote Arizona highways. It was actually an engineering magazine. It was it was kind of what we would call a trade magazine today, written for, you know, road engineers, people who did road construction. It existed for a little while, and then it kind of died off. And then I think around 1925, 1926, around there, it started up again. And it was really the photographs by people like Ansel Adams, Ray Manley, David and Joseph Munich, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Munich, I believe it is.
That what it is? Okay, David Munich is the correct pronunciation. That actually kind of made it into the world-renowned magazine it is now, where people know about it all over the world. So it really was a photography, not necessarily the articles, that made it famous. But Arizona Magazine, to answer your question, Dan, was a separate magazine. There still are copies at the Joel Valdez main library. Arizona Historic Society probably has them as well, but it's not the same magazine.
All right, let's go back to the live line, 790-2040. Mary Lou has a question. Go ahead, Mary Lou.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I was wondering if you know the history of Soldier Trail.
Soldier Trail Road?
Yes.
Okay, okay. I know that Soldier Trail Road was created, I believe, that's probably around the, probably 30s or 40s. And it was originally supposed to be called Lyerly Road. When they originally built that road, it was supposed to be called Lyerly Road, L-Y-E-R-L-Y, if I remember correctly, named after the family that owned the land that the road ran through, or part of it ran through. It was originally supposed to be named after them. Soldiers Trail Road, if I'm saying it all correctly, I would guess, I mean, this is somewhat of an educated guess, is that Soldiers Trail Road was called that because it went in the same direction and led to Soldiers Trail, which went up Mount Lemmon, which led to Soldiers Camp.
Okay.
So that's a guess, but that's probably correct.
And I did want to mention the book you're working on, Howard Hughes and Hughes Aircraft. Kind of, I guess it's a deep dive into Hughes Aircraft, the origins of Hughes Aircraft in Los Angeles. You're also kind of reworking, updating your 2015 book about Hughes Aircraft and the Tucson connection.
Correct. Back in 2015, I made a book called The History of the Hughes Missile Plant in Tucson, 1947 to 1960, with the goal of preserving some of the early history of the plant site, which is now, of course, Raytheon, before that history is lost. I've interviewed several people since then, so I'm going to actually revise that book on the Tucson history and add more information. I've obtained more historical photos and stuff like that. So I'm going to be revising that book. I mean, it's in the library. All the libraries have it. It's called The History of the Hughes Missile Plant in Tucson. And I'm also working on another book, kind of a prequel to it, on Hughes Aircraft in Los Angeles. Now, I'm doing this from the perspective of what it was like to be an employee in the business. So the books that have been written about already have been written by presidents like Pat Hyland and Kenneth Richardson from a higher up viewpoint. But I'm trying to write these books on what it was like to be an employee and to kind of preserve that history of the early history. I mean, most people I'm interviewing are in their 90s now.
Wow.
So that's the goal, is just to cover up to 1960. So the one on Los Angeles, Hughes Aircraft Los Angeles, will just cover 1932 to 1960. 32 is when the Howard Hughes founded the company.
And we'll have to bring you back to talk about Hughes. We could do the whole half hour with you about that.
Yeah.
Greg has a question for you real quickly about Hughes. Go ahead, Greg.
Was the Roy Drachman account in his book about the transaction for that land accurate?
To the best of my knowledge, I mean, everything that I could find seems to match up. I can't say 100% sure, but I mean, from what I've read, and I think you're, yeah, I know which book you're from, Cowtown to a Metropolis. Is that the book you're referring to?
Yeah, I think that was, that was.
Okay, yeah. And to the best of my knowledge, everything I could find on that is accurate. I mean, I talked to his grandson and did the best research I could. The best as I can find, that's an accurate story.
All right.
Crazy adventure. Thanks.
Thank you very much. David Lighton with us from the Street Smarts column at the Arizona Daily Star. It's always a fascinating half hour with you, David. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bill. I love coming on your show.
Well, I appreciate it. And we'll have to bring you back maybe just to specifically talk about Howard Hughes. I think we could easily fill a half hour on
that. Or a whole show, for that matter, really, with all the information I found.
All right. Thank you, David. Coming up this afternoon, we have Mike Check with Mike Shaw. Bob, you're going to be helping, Bob Dio, my engineer producer, helping Mike out this afternoon. Wake Up Tucson, 6 to 9, then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow at 12:04. On behalf of Bob and David, all of us wish you a great afternoon and evening.